welcome to the iForumRx podcast, where we explore the evidence that matters in ambulatory care pharmacy practice. Today we'll be examining the OPTIMIZE study, which was published in the July 3, 2014 issue of The Lancet. Here to discuss the results of the OPTIMIZE study and its clinical implications is Rick Hess. Rick is on faculty at East Tennessee State University and works in a private endocrinology group. Thanks for joining us today, Rick.
Thank you, Stuart. Thanks for having me.
So you and your co-author, Brooklyn Nelson, wrote a commentary regarding the OPTIMIZE study. And in this study, they examined the use of insulin pumps in patients with type 2 diabetes. If you had to briefly summarize in four sentences or less the OPTIMIZE study to someone who hasn't read the paper, what would you say?
Well, the basic message that the OPTIMIZE teaches us is that patients with type 2 diabetes who are on basal bolus regimen and despite that are failing intensification of therapy experience better blood sugar control when they are put on an insulin pump as opposed to keeping them on insulin injections. The difference between treatment groups was 0.7% in the A1C. The baseline A1C was 9% in both groups, and nearly twice as many patients who were randomized to receive insulin pump achieved an A1C less than 8% as opposed to those who were continued on the multi-daily insulin. And what's kind of remarkable about this is that this improvement that they saw when they're wearing an insulin pump did not come at the expense of more hypoglycemia or even weight gain.
So critically examining the study methodology, what would you say are the major strengths and potential weaknesses and limitations of the OPTIMIZE study?
Well, one of the strengths is the novelty of the study. Previous studies that enrolled patients with type 2 diabetes on insulin pumps were much smaller, underpowered. There were conflicting results as to whether or not pump therapy reduced blood sugar better than multi-daily injection. So it was a large trial, and it addressed a question that was needed. It was multi-centered. It was international. It was adequately powered. The analysis was intention to treat. There was a two-month run-in phase where the clinicians were following a standardized protocol. They titrated or intensified their insulin regimens based off of this protocol, and they were targeting ADA goals, so a preprandial of 70 to 130 and a postprandial of less than 180. Everyone also received nutrition counseling and diabetes education. And finally, final strength would be that if patients were randomized to receive a pump, they received 2 to 3 weeks of training on that pump. So the education that they got was appropriate, and the support that they got from their providers was appropriate. One of the main weaknesses, of course, is because of the study design is that it's an open label trial. The patients and the clinicians knew which treatment arm they were on. And I think that this study design also leads to some treatment bias. And by that, what I mean is that they were very selective in the patients that were enrolled. There were 36 centers that participated in this study. 495 patients entered the run-in phase. As I said, it was a two-month run-in phase. And during this two-month run-in phase, these patients had to monitor their blood sugar at least three times a day, including postprandial readings. And the 495 patients that entered in the run-in phase, about a third of those violated the protocol and weren't allowed to be randomized. So in the end, 331 patients were randomized. And so when you think about it, you think about 36 centers around the world that took nearly 3 years to enroll this number of patients, you're talking about a very small, select population. They excluded patients with significant diabetes complications. They excluded any patients with severe insulin resistance, those who use more than 220 units a day. They also did not account for any bolus adherence, or there was no way to accurately compare bolus doses since you've got a pump therapy and an MDI regimen. The self-monitoring frequency in the multi-daily injection group diminished over time. And finally, one of the other limitations, there was really no qualitative measurements that were reported, but there was no quality of life outcomes.
So, unlike the use of insulin pumps by patients with type 1 diabetes, their use in patients with type 2 diabetes is far from commonplace. And why is that? The results of this study and others have shown that insulin pumps are effective in terms of glycemic control and have some quality of life advantages. What do you see are the barriers to using continuous subcutaneous insulin infusion therapy in patients with type 2 diabetes?
Stuart, I think the main barrier is implementation. You know, type 2 patients are primarily treated in primary care offices, and many of these offices don't have the personnel or the resources to train people on pumps and to manage people on pumps. And so really it's implementation. This is an area where I feel that ambulatory care pharmacists can really step in and fill in the gap and collaborate with primary care practices. You don't start a patient on a pump for the first time in a 15-minute office visit, and it requires an interprofessional collaboration where pharmacists, I believe, are ideal to step in and help fill the gap. Another barrier is costs. As you know, these insulin pumps are not cheap. They're several thousand dollars, and there are many insurance companies that will not pay for an insulin pump in a patient who has type 2 diabetes. And then finally, another barrier is really a lack of evidence. The benefits of patients who wear pumps with type 2 diabetes seems to be a little less clear than it is with type 1s. Because in type 1s, of course, you get the lowering A1C, you get the better quality of life, but you also have data that demonstrates that there's less hypoglycemia. And recently, too, just this year, in the British Medical Journal, there was an observational study that showed that patients with type 1 diabetes who wear pumps have decreased cardiovascular mortality. I mean, the Optimize is giving us more evidence. But really, all we know, honestly, about type 2 diabetes and pumps is that they lower A1C better and that quality of life is improved when patients wear pumps. So when you look at type 1 versus type 2, there are benefits with type 2, but we have a lack of evidence that could be a contributor to why we don't see as many patients with type 2 wearing pumps.
And my last question, if you had a patient with poorly controlled type 2 diabetes who had an A1C well above their goal on multiple daily injections of insulin, under what circumstances would you consider initiating an insulin pump?
That's a great question and one that really needs to be considered prior to starting or even talking about pumps with patients with type 2 diabetes. I think what this study teaches us first and foremost is that they have to be willing to self-monitor at least 3 times a day. That was one of the inclusion criteria and one of the reasons why about a third of the patients were not randomized. So monitoring is extremely important. And I think, secondly, you have to have a healthcare team, a diabetes educator, certified pump trainer that they can work with. And the patient has to be motivated. And then finally, they have to be able to afford it.
Well, thanks very much, Rick, for your comments about the Optimize study and the potential benefits of insulin pump therapy in patients with type 2 diabetes. It's clear that some patients will benefit from insulin pumps if they have poorly controlled type 2. However, many patients with poorly controlled type 2 diabetes have never really been optimized on their insulin therapy regimen, and some are not motivated to check their blood glucose 3 or 4 times a day. So only a small portion of patients with type 2 diabetes are likely candidates for insulin pump therapy. Well, we welcome your comments on iFormRx about the use of insulin pumps in patients with type 2 diabetes, or any other comments that you may have about the Optimize study. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, signing off.